Okay, do we have some microphones available for the audience that may want to ask questions? Do we have any questions first? Okay, for those of you on this side of the room, the question was, we don't have a universal definition of a backlog. Can anybody want to take a crack at what a universal backlog might be? How do you define it?
Well, you have to define the terminology first so that you can actually apply it to the backlog. And because we don't say what a case is, what an item is, how things are counted, until we say if it's possible. Now, there have been many years Greg and I were talking to each other just now saying this is something that everybody's asked this exact question. Until you can define the terms that say these are identifiable units, the backlog is going to be what each and every person reports as their own backlog. So you're not going to have a total number as of date certain. You have to get the terminology down right. You have to say what an item is, what a case is, and where they're, and identify where they're at. I just don't think it can be answered right at the moment.
I mean, obviously, I talked about a backlog definition change that we had. I agree. I mean, getting some sort of standardization is very difficult. I would love for somebody to come along and say, from now on, you have to call it X, Y, and Z. Unfortunately, you know, coming from an agency that has a heck of an ego, they definitely like to call things the way they want to call it unless they're being mandated to do it. They have to figure out a way to get along with other people. So coming up with a standard one is going to be difficult. But to answer your question, number one, I think it has to be request-based. I mean, obviously, we don't know what exists out there in most areas. And that does actually pertain or go along with our current situation, because another way of saying that all of the, you know, all of a sudden our backlog became all the kits in the freezer, another way of saying is overnight, all of those were requested to be analyzed. So if you start on the basis that it's the cases that have been requested to analyze, then decide at what point it no longer is a backlog, which should be at its final state of the analysis, whatever that happens to be. The final thing is, do you count it from when the request is made, or do you count, give yourself a 30-day or a 60-day? That's something within our laboratory we're actually looking at, because many people don't count a backlog the moment a request is made, because if it's going to be completed in a timely manner, they don't want that on their books. So, you know, a lot of places when it comes to biology, they don't consider a backlog until it's like 60 days old, and we're considering that. In our case, narcotics becomes a backlog immediately, but as opposed to a lot of other agencies, we have to get the narcotics done within 48 hours, so we don't carry much of a backlog in there.
Does anybody know whether the Foresight study is addressing this issue? Yes, George. Thank you, George. Tim?
This is a question for Kevin Strong. According to IACP, I believe they say there's about 42,000 law enforcement agencies in the United States, and you surveyed about 3,100. Does that mean the true backlog is about 14 or 15 times higher than what you're reporting?
Now, I don't know about the 42,000 in the United States. I may include, you know, many types of specialized police. General estimates are about 17 to 18,000 state and local law enforcement agencies. And we surveyed a representative sample of those, which was about 3,000 agencies, and then applied statistical weights to give us a national average. National
total. Based on what you think is the national average?
It would be a national total, correct, for state and local agencies.
Pat?
Question for Greg. Now that you've removed the discretion for sex crimes, why is it not reasonable to then move
my personal opinion. I mean, one of the reasons that the discretion was removed from sexual assault cases had to do with, number one, it was a very easily defined piece of evidence that we could locate within our freezers. I mean, there's some practicality involved in this. It doesn't necessarily involve sexual assault cases at this point where there is no rape kit collected from it. The issue was the sexual assault kits because you could identify those and count them. It also had a very strong and well-organized group of people that are interested in seeing these happen. So the likelihood of another type of analysis getting the same kind of attention from external forces, I think, is fairly small. From my own viewpoint, I think it makes less sense because you do need the detective's input to determine whether or not a piece of evidence is informative or probative to the investigation. And not that it isn't important to have their information in a sexual assault kit, but anybody in the room that has ever worked a sexual assault investigation, there are so many unknowns, and the victims are reluctant to give information many times, that it almost pays to do the work and then figure out later on what the events were from the evidence as opposed to the other way around.
Joe?
Kevin, I was curious about your statement. You said 29% of the agencies didn't have alerts in their case. What does that mean? I mean, they didn't know where the problem was?
You know, I'm not sure. We didn't really ask for clarification on that particular response. It could have been, you know, in some cases it was small, the very small agencies. For example, on the issue of no suspect identified in the case, I think 70% of the agencies that responded to that question were very small. So sometimes it's a learning curve at the smaller scale, and that could be an issue with that response as well.
Go ahead, Litton.
I have to say, as a CODIS state administrator, that I'm confident that the Los Angeles Police Department local DNA system administrator will be ensuring that only forensic unknown profiles are coming into our state DNA index system from this massive undertaking in their part. And I'm serious about that. I know what's going on with you guys, and I trust that, but we've got to understand that you cannot just
That has been one of our major concerns throughout this whole area. And if you remember, I want to go back at the review that our Detective Bureau did of all the kits in the freezer. One of the things that they did was they looked up every single case, either pulled the case package or looked it in the automated system to determine what the status of it is and where the evidence came from and associated piece of information. That's why we found out that out of that batch, 700 plus were considered to be unfounded, and those won't be analyzed and won't be uploaded. So it definitely was a concern of ours. And actually, that's one of those areas where we very much appreciate the fact that there are rules out there. And I know for that at least one of the strong victim advocate groups feel that we shouldn't take that into consideration. But having the law behind us, we can tell them, no, we have to take that into consideration.
Barry?
Another little wrinkle, Greg and we at the sheriff's staff have lived in the same processes because we're dealing with the same issues. But unlike the city lab, which has one principal client, the sheriff's lab has probably around 50 clients. And while our sheriff dictated that we follow the same procedure,
So that I understand correctly, are you saying that the local police departments are going to pay to put an analyst in your laboratory to work their cases under your supervision and control? Interesting concept. Yes, sir.
You know, I have no idea whether or not, you know, where they're going to go with it, but they will have the same groups watching them that watched us, and maybe they'll be able to get additional resources out of it. Along with the growth in our laboratory, our rape special section, or our cold case group in the police department right now has more detectives assigned to just the investigation of these type of cases than anywhere else in the country. So they have received additional resources for exactly that same thing. So I don't know, we'll see. One of the things that I didn't mention is Joe Peterson from Cal State LA is going to be doing a very exhaustive review of the experience that we have, what prosecutions come out of it, how many hits we have, and try and correlate it to the type of evidence that was collected or the type of situation surrounding the crime. So hopefully by the time we are done with this and he's done with this study, it will allow other laboratories or other jurisdictions to decide whether or not there's value in analyzing all of the kits or maybe just the kits that fall into a certain category. We're going to kind of wait and see. In the meantime, we'll be done with our backlog, and other people hopefully will be able to make some more intelligent decisions than was made in our jurisdiction.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, when it comes to the backlog or the previously unrequested or whatever the backlog case, unknown or stranger rapes, basically, our goal is to identify that person as quickly as possible. So in other words, the process that we're doing to analyze these kits, the stranger ones, is to have them start working their way through the items until they find foreign DNA. From the victim and stop at that point. That then can be uploaded if it meets the rest of the criteria into CODIS. If we get a hit and they move on to prosecution, then it's entirely likely that that kit will then become a new request. It'll come back to the laboratory and all the rest of the items will be analyzed to determine whether or not there's additional charges. But the first round through is just to find something foreign and to get that uploaded into CODIS.
Any other questions? Well, join me in thanking our panelists today. I think they've done a great job.